Llamas are, however, very dangerous. So, if you see one where people are swimming, you must shout out,
"Cuidado! Llama!"
Look out, there are llamas.
Hi there, and welcome to Baseball by Design. I am sportslogos.net minor league baseball correspondent Paul Caputo, broadcasting live, as always, from the Sunday Helmet Hall of Fame in my basement in Fort Collins, Colorado. Today, we're going to be talking about one of the historic brands in all of minor league baseball, the AA Chattanooga Lookouts, who play in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I will be speaking later on in this episode with Will Wilson, who is a park ranger at Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park. And of course, Dan Simon will be here with a Studio Simon Stumper. Right now, I am so pleased to be joined by the president of the Chattanooga Lookouts, Rich Mozingo. Rich, how are you doing?
I'm awesome, man. How are you today?
I am so psyched to be talking about a classic, fun minor league baseball brand, one of the early quintessential wacky logos in minor league baseball, a pair of eyeballs. Let's talk about, there's so much to talk about here. For a simple logo, there's an awful lot to talk about. Before we get into the actual branding of the team, I think the history of this team is really fascinating. Been around for a long time. The date that I see attributed to this team is 1885. And it's apparently been the same franchise that whole time. So it's not like, different teams coming and going, that sort of thing. How has this team had such longevity?
Well, I think it goes back to the heydays of baseball. I mean, it goes back to the very, very beginnings of baseball, to be honest. This is when baseball was just starting anywhere. So 1885 is when they first founded the Lookouts in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And to your point, Paul, I mean, it's crazy that over all these years and everything that minor league baseball has gone through and the industrial leagues and the D leagues and the C leagues, that it's remained the same name the entire time, the Chattanooga Lookouts. And it really is a credit to the city of Chattanooga and the people who have run this for years and years and years.
So currently a double A team and affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds, which mm-hmm. works with the red color you have in the branding, of course, but there's been many, many parent clubs over the years. This team, they played through many eras where teams were named for their parent clubs and didn't have unique nicknames, where, this team has always sort of stood out. Mm-hmm. Current era, I think of it as, and I'm not alone in this, but the current era is the eyeball era.
Sure.
That brand debuted in 1991, the mm-hmm. first version of the eyeball era. Understanding that you were not with the team in 1991, but your first stint with the team started shortly thereafter in 1993.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you're back. You've been with the team for another 13 years. So what, 21, 22 years total with the team. Can mm-hmm. you speak to sort of where that eyeball logo came from and, what it means and how it was received in Chattanooga?
Well, I mean, it was, like you said, it was a couple years before I got here and there was an awful lot of talk when I got here. It was unbelievably iconic by the time I got here in 1993, because most teams were doing exactly what you said. I mean, the old Evansville Triplets was just the Detroit D that made in the shape of an E. I mean, we had been, I was with the Texas Rangers. We were the Charlotte Rangers down in Florida. So all the teams had that feel about them at that time. And when I got here, it was really kind of just off the charts to have this different looking logo. I guess, Paul, it was accepted. It was unbelievably popular here in Chattanooga, but it hadn't taken the world yet. I mean, the internet was, fledgling at that point for consumers. So you couldn't see what the Mudcats were doing in Zebulon. The Biscuits weren't even around yet. The Toledo Mudhens were still just using a big T on the front of their cap. So it was wildly popular, but people didn't know how groundbreaking it was at that time to do something like they had done here.
And that's interesting because, that's more than three decades ago at this point, right? Mm-hmm. And the Lookouts have had the name Lookouts since 1885, mm-hmm. playing through eras where, as we said, teams were named for their parent clubs. But since then, since 1991, you rattled off a couple of the teams that have sort of established the wacky era of minor league baseball mm-hmm. logos. There was the Lansing mm-hmm. Lugnuts and you mentioned the Biscuits and the Carolina Mudcats, I think, get a lot of credit for being one of the early adopters of wackiness. Obviously, since then, it's just taken off and it's gone crazy. So now the lookouts are on the other side of that. You know, you have this very simple logo, the couple of eyeballs and the letter C, and still steadfastly staying with this tried and true brand rather than rebranding or you know, coming up with a character with binoculars or, you know, there's all sorts of things you could do that would be more consistent with the, you know, the last 10 years of minor league baseball branding. Has the temptation existed to do that? Or if not, how come the team has stuck with this simpler logo that's a remnant of a simpler time?
Well, I think it has stuck for a lot of different reasons. And number one, and it's an overused word, it definitely in minor league baseball, maybe not so much, but it's really an iconic logo. I mean, it's truly a tried and true logo that has stood the test of time, but it also has a lot. I mean, you know, you talk about the lookouts and it's got two big eyeballs in it. It just makes all the sense in the world. You know, the one thing that you cannot do here in Chattanooga, and we won't do here in Chattanooga, is change the name. And if you're going to go to something else that says lookouts, I don't know how you're going to make it that much better than it is right this minute. So for that and a lot of other reasons, we've stuck with it, you know. But also, if you walk through the concourse of the ballpark today, I mean, you'll look up and you'll see really, really bad uniforms. We were a Mariners affiliate or an Indians affiliate, you know. So, you know, we're in a good place and we continue to work on, you know, updating and making sure that we stay fresh as a brand, but in the same time, holding true to the Eyes logo and what we're doing there.
So I wrote about this team for sportslogos.net back in 2015. And in that article, the logo itself is attributed to an assistant general manager at the time who drew a pair of Garfield eyes inside the letter C. And that essentially became the logo. I'm sure it was tidied up before it went into production. Is Matthew Riley someone you knew when you were working there in your first stint? And is that story consistent with your memory of what happened?
That story is absolutely consistent with my memory of what happened, but that is just not factually true. and Matt Riley is a good friend of mine. I talk to Matt Riley often still. Just a really great guy, and he did come up with the idea. He came up with the idea of doing something like that. I don't know there was ever a sketch that was drawn out or anything like that. He absolutely downplays his part in the Eyes logo itself. But he was the one that carried the process through. He made the Eyes logo happen, and he made it a viable logo for us today. But he does not and will not take credit for making the logo himself.
All right. I may have to go tidy that article up here. I haven't I haven't been corrected in the comments yet. But, you know, I want to make even 8 years later, I want to make sure that these articles are factually correct.
I tell you, I mean, I've talked to him about this. Gosh, Paul, it might have been since you and I set this podcast up. And he said, you know, that's what I've always, I mean, you've read it out there a bunch of different times, but it just didn't happen that way. So,
well, I'll have to go back and investigate where I got that information. And I appreciate you setting the record straight. The logo is fun. The logo is very simple. The name has withstood the test of time. Often with these names that originate in the late 1800s, you know, the process obviously is different for coming up with these names, but there's still some connection to the local community. So can you tell me, you know, what the name means and where does it come from?
Well, we are in the middle of the Tennessee Valley, and we sit under the shadow of Lookout Mountain here in Chattanooga. So, of course, Lookout Mountain's been around since way before 1885, and that's kind of what they hung their hat on. When they started playing baseball in 1885, they literally started a little bit further south from where we are right this minute and almost in the shadows of Lookout Mountain. In fact, definitely in the shadows of Lookout Mountain every night. So they have they named it Lookouts and stuck with it.
Is there any inclination? Is there any conversation with the Lookouts to have, you know, more alternate brands, to have more promotional nights with different looks, that sort of thing? Or is that outside the scope of the team's branding?
No, that's definitely not outside of the scope of the branding now. And you know, when this latest phase of new branding and new alternate logos and that kind of stuff came around, I guess it was 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. And I just remember it I think it was the Lehigh Valley or maybe Reading with the cheesesteaks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And when we have been a little bit slow jumping on board because we are very, very careful about what we do here, but and maybe it is breaking news, but stay tuned here for Chattanooga, because I think you'll see something in the not too distant future of some kind of alternate identity as we come out, hopefully, for the 2024 season.
All right. We are recording this in the middle.
So I'm going to be held to it, is what you're telling me.
We're recording. Well, this is the middle of Logovember right now. And so far, as of this moment, Logovember has been a little bit slow. Like I said, we had the grasshoppers. There's been a couple of sort of teasers about things coming. So I will keep my eyes out, as it were, for the nice. Chattanooga the Chattanooga nice. Lookouts news here. Hey friends, it's Paul checking in from the future about that cryptic conversation we just had about the Chattanooga Lookouts unveiling some new branding at an indeterminate future date. Turns out that indeterminate future date was the day after we conducted this interview. The Lookouts unveiled their Scenic City jersey, which I covered on sportslogos.net, so you can go check that out over there. It's a red jersey with the script Scenic City across the front of it, and it pays tribute to the natural beauty in Chattanooga, Tennessee. They've got some great pictures of players at the aquarium in Chattanooga and on some fancy bridges and at Ruby Falls, and really does show off the scenery there in Chattanooga. Breaking news here on Baseball by Design. You can read all about it on sportslogos.net. All right, now back to the conversation. The great thing about this brand is, right, like, I'm sure whoever on staff, whether it was Matthew Riley or someone else, first sketched this on a napkin. There was probably not focus groups, right? You know, the changes that have happened over the years, whether it's been sort of subtle things with the type or changing colors, what were behind those changes?
Well, you know, when the new ownership bought the ball club, I think in 2015, and Jason Fryer with Hardball Capital came in, and we looked at new uniforms, and we got brand new uniforms for our teams and our team, and decided that we were going to kind of update what we were doing. And everyone was on the same page that we did not need to do much with the logo. But it was that year. It used to have, I mean, little silly things. Paul, it used to have two eyebrows on top of the eyes, and now it's gone to one. And there's the faintest shadow at the bottom of the eyes right now. One of the things that I always looked at was it kind of lacks a little depth. There's not a lot of depth in the logo. And we tried to just do it a little bit, but with a little bit of shadowing. I don't know whether we accomplished it or not, but that's the kind of tweaks you're talking about. I mean, just the most minuscule of things that we can do to hopefully just kind of keep that brand alive and keep that logo alive as well.
So part of the, you know, not just the brand identity, but the overall brand of this team is its longevity, is its history. Some classic stories associated with the team. Sure. One of them, and I'm sure you get this question all the time, is of course the story from 1931 with a 17-year-old young woman named Jackie Mitchell, who pitched for the Lookouts and struck out both Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth in an exhibition. First of all, can you confirm? And you know, understanding that that was also slightly before your first stint with the team. You know, how much is the lore of the team part of the branding and the identity now?
I think number one, I can confirm as closely as I'm able to confirm that did happen. There's pictures of it. Once again, in our ballpark right this minute. She actually was a resident of Chattanooga her whole life. So there are many, many people who knew her and knew about that. But it is that lore. It's what Joe Engel was doing. And, you know, it was really, you want to talk about before your time, and it was Joe Engel and what he was doing at minor league baseball games and the things that he was doing to bring people to the ballpark. You know, throwing a 16-year-old, 17-year-old pitcher, female pitcher against Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig was just one of the many, many things he did. He had an elephant that he painted Lookouts on the side of and walked through the streets of Chattanooga. He gave away a house one night at the ballpark, or actually one afternoon, because there was no lights out there. But they had, it was like 17,000 people in a stadium that sat 5,000 people. So Joe Engel was absolutely just way ahead of his time for minor league baseball. You know, we're all doing the silly things now to draw people out to the ballpark and do those kinds of things. But man, he was doing them back in the 30s and 40s, and he really was one of the leaders of the movement that we all see right now at light warp speed.
Wow. I think maybe this breaking news that you're talking about is there's going to be a live elephant at the ballpark here in Chattanooga.
When I was here from 93 to 2002, from about 95 to, I guess, 96 to 99, we had two live camels that lived in the outfield. Does that count?
I think that counts a lot. I think that's pretty great, having two live camels in the outfield. Yep. Mm-hmm. Were they available for rides or were they just hanging out?
Nope, just hung out in center field. Larry and Lumpy, they both wore batting helmets. Center field in Old Ingle Stadium was 471 feet from home plate.
Wow.
So they had a place over there that they could hang out. The zoo was literally, gosh, a quarter of a mile away. So they would walk into the beginning of a homestand and walk out at the end of the homestand.
That's amazing. It's incredible. Yeah. Rich, this has been such a blast. Thank you so much for taking the time. There's so much history in this team, so much to unpack, and so much to go back and correct in articles, you know, correct the historical record on where this brand came from. I'll ask you, if it wasn't Matthew, you don't happen to know who it was, do you? Is there someone that Matthew says it should have been?
I do not know. I do not know. I'm sure I will talk to Matt again soon, and I will see if I can find out that for you. And I'll be back in touch with you and let you know.
All right. Yeah. Let's hope that that's not lost to history right there. And in the meantime, Rich, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun, and I'll be on the lookout for that new information. I don't really deal in puns very much, but this name just sort of lends itself to it. Rich, where can people find the team? Where can people find you online, on social media, etc.?
Yeah, just look us up at lookouts.com. We got all the information you need for Lookouts Baseball. You can get that great logo and 1,000 different items in our gift shop right this minute. So we'd love to have you. So look us up at lookouts.com.
My name is Will Wilson. I am a park ranger in interpretation at Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park. We have a unit of the National Military Park is the Lookout Mountain Battlefield, okay, which includes Point Park at the top of Lookout Mountain.
Thanks, Will. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me on this phone call. I'm a huge fan of the National Park Service. I'm a huge fan of the interpretation and education that happens there. As you point out, too, this is actually the second time I have had a park ranger from the National Park Service on the podcast to talk about a mountain as it relates to a minor league baseball team. I had Ranger Darby Robinson, who works at Mount Rainier National Park, on an episode about the Tacoma Rainiers. So,
all right.
So appreciate you hopping on and joining me. And so, yeah, the question's a real basic one. Where did Lookout Mountain's name come from?
Well, there's actually, you never really can pinpoint one place that it kind of comes from. I've had several, in reading, seen several origins of the name. Of course, the top of the mountain when you get here, like at Point Park, and you have this amazing view overlooking the city of Chattanooga and up the Tennessee River Valley, which on a clear day you can certainly see for quite a ways. And even though, like our good friends at Rock City have the little dial that tells you that you're able to see seven states, unfortunately you are not able to see seven states. In the points, you can actually see four, but, okay, you know, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, North Carolina, the three you can't see, South Carolina, because the mountains of the Blue Ridge in Georgia are too high for you to see actually a place in South Carolina, the mm-hmm. other two being Kentucky and Virginia, and really because of the curvature of the earth, you're not able to see those states as well. You can see the direction of them, but you're not actually seeing anything in those states.
Yeah.
But from the top of Lookout Mountain, I mean, you are, in a sense, looking out. So mm-hmm. that is one. The other dates back to when the area was being first inhabited by European settlers, and it was still a very, very hospitable place. That it was rugged and raw and violent in some cases, mm-hmm. and so there are times that people will be robbed and murdered along the routes through the area, and that point of the mountain that is in between Moccasin Bend and the south side of the river, you know, there's only one way to get across it. And so it was an easy way to ambush somebody. So it was a way for people to say, you know, watch for Lookout Mountain and watch, you know, looking out for yourself. So that was another one. Now, okay. You know, the idea that I like the best is the fact that when I do programs at Point Park and I take people to a particular place on where you have this amazing view, I tell people, you know, you are on Lookout Mountain and now you are able to look out.
That is the aha moment where you've brought your visitor to the moment where they can take it all in for themselves.
It is that aha moment, you know. I mean, when people do see it for the first time, I mean, it and again, if it is a nice bluebird sunny day, there are also those days that it's socked in, just like the Battle of Lookout Mountain's nickname entails, the battle above the clouds. Well, there are days that you can't see 10 feet in front of you, you know, mm-hmm. because of the low-hanging clouds and fog. So it's all on what kind of a day that you arrive, you know, to get that view, you know.
Absolutely. I was, you know, as a fan of the national parks, I mean, you can rough way of dividing them in half is you've got your natural parks and then you've got your sort of culture and history parks. This one, you know, obviously, as is the case with so many of them, right, it walks that line between the two, right? Like it's a natural site, it's a mountain, but it's obviously played such an important role in terms of the people who have lived there over the centuries and the you know the role in particular that it played with the Civil War. Is there an overarching story that you want your visitors to leave with after they've been to the park?
Well, yeah, certainly you are right in both regards. Lookout Mountain in the Chattanooga Valley is very scenic. I mean, Chattanooga's nickname is the Scenic City. But the whole reason that you have roughly 3,000 acres of Lookout Mountain preserved is because of the veterans of the American Civil War felt strongly enough that these hallowed grounds that they once fought over be preserved, not necessarily for themselves, but for us. You know, mm-hmm. so that we can learn their story of service and of sacrifice and those that gave the ultimate sacrifice. It is why they set aside, you know, areas around Chattanooga, including places along Missionary Ridge, Orchard Knob, Lookout Mountain, and then, of course, the battlefield at Chickamauga. And with that, you know, Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park is the very first National Military Park created by Congress on August 19, 1890. And it is then when the veterans saw fit to mark the battlefields with monuments and markers and tablets to tell their story. And they are doing this, you know, again, to let us know the importance of this place. Because regardless if they were a Confederate soldier, regardless if they were a Union soldier, these men are Americans that are coming together once again to try and heal our country and bring it back together as one nation. That's what motivated these men, just like they were motivated in battle to keep pushing forward into the hail of gunfire, into the shot of cannon. Well, they're motivated now in the halls of Congress, because literally at this time, half of the United States Congress is a Civil War veteran, to, you know, make, you know, these lands that we now have as preserved battlefields, you know, Chickamauga and Chattanooga, Antietam, also set aside by Congress in 1890, Shiloh in 1894, Gettysburg in 1896, and then Vicksburg in 1899, all of those, you know, being established in the last decade of the 19th century, is a testament to, you know, their view of what, you know, these places really should be. And they are beautiful today, but at that time, you know, the scenes of battle is certainly something that, you know, they never forgot. And it's why they set these places aside, so that we can learn their stories. And that is what we do here, to try to get people connected to this place and to learn those stories.
Well, the National Park Service is truly a treasure, and the conservation of our lands and our history and the stories of so many cultures. I mean, so important. And so I appreciate the work that you do. I appreciate you hopping on this phone call to chat about the park and to tell a little bit of this story. So much more, I'm sure, to take in with an actual visit to Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park. Will, thank you so much. I wanted to point out, just it popped into my head as you were saying it, I didn't know that this park was established in 1890. That is just 5 years after the team, the Chattanooga Lookouts, played its first game. So here's a couple of institutions that go back almost a century and a half. So, but again, Will, thank you so much. This has been it's been a treat to talk to you, and I appreciate your time and all that you do.
Indeed. Thank you.
All right, everyone, welcome back. It's time once again for our favorite segment on the podcast. It's Dan Simon of Studio Simon here with Studio Simon Stumpers. And Dan, I know you have a Studio Simon Stumper, or maybe even a double stumper. I can never tell going into game day whether we're playing one or two. But before we get started, we are here the morning after the unveiling of an extremely popular rebrand that was the result of your handicraft. Congratulations on the hugely positive reaction that the Rome Emperors are getting.
Well, I sincerely appreciate that, but I have to humbly, I can't take credit for the positive reaction. That all of the credit goes to the Penguin.
That's true. All the glory goes to the designers. That's what I've always said.
Yeah, it's easy to be a good photographer when you've got a great model. So
I have a friend and long ago guest on this podcast, Chris Smith, who at one point worked at the Duke Lemur Center. And I had him come on. He is in the art of interpreting sciences. And so he came on the Albuquerque Isotopes episode to talk about what an isotope is. But I remember he worked at the Duke Lemur Center and he was responsible for their Instagram. And he was like, look how easy Instagram is. You know, everything I post gets a bajillion responses. And it's like, yeah, you're taking pictures of lemurs. It's no fair.
Yep. Yep. I had a good model there. So he's the hero. So kudos to him.
Absolutely. The Penguin is, I mean, what a hit he is. Everyone loves him. There was a very brief moment for me where I was just like, a penguin, what the heck? And then I thought, Emperor Penguin, of course, Emperor Penguin. So, and then I you know, wrote about it on sportslogos.net. You and I chatted fairly briefly. I did have a great comment when I posted about it on social media. Jason Jennings, who is a fellow ice cream helmet collector, he commented, it's nice that because of your podcast, I can hear Dan's voice when I'm reading his quotes. And so I actually kind of feel the same way there. Always your voice is in my head when I'm transcribing these quotes. So anyway, congratulations on that. It's a great rebrand. I know you want to deflect and give credit to the Penguin, but I think you two made a great team.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. It's I love when I do something and it gets unveiled. You know, we do it so far in advance and you just sit, I don't sit there actively waiting, but it didn't used to be like this. Brand identities used to be due September of the year, like September 1st, the year prior to the season that they were going to take the field. Now they're due December, well, at least the CAP logo artwork is due December 4th for like this year, December 4th, 2023 is when cap logo artwork finished, done, in the can, delivered, is due to Major League Baseball for 2025 brand identities.
Wow. So, we visited you in August of 2022 during our Baseball Palooza road trip that took us through Louisville. And when this brand came out, one of the guys on the, from that trip asked, is that the brand that Dan was working on that was top secret for 2024?
It very well could have been, but you know what? That was, I don't know. I work on a bunch of stuff, and frankly, once it's done, it's on to the next thing and out of sight, out of mind.
Well, let's talk about the Chattanooga Lookouts. I'm sure you have a really stimulating stumper. Ooh, a stimulating stumper. There's some alliteration going on there. File that one away for another time. But yeah, let's talk about the Chattanooga Lookouts and this week's Studio Simon Stumper.
The Chattanooga Lookouts, they've got one of the best minor league identities of all time. You know, there's not a lot going on with it. It's really just that cap logo. But it's so iconic. It's one of the first minor league caps I ever bought. I just love it. Love it. And I hope they never change it. So, you know, speaking of their brand identity system not necessarily having a lot of elements to it, I have to admit I'm not that familiar with all of their alternate identities, however many they may have. They actually just unveiled a new alternate, a new jersey that says I think Scenic City on it. Is that what it was? So they do have stuff like that. Also in 2022, the Lookouts played two games as the Chattanooga Choo Choos as part of their Negro League Appreciation Weekend. Now, for all I know, they may have done that in 2023 this past season as well. I don't know for sure. I just know that they started it in 2022. They played against the Birmingham Barons, who played as the Birmingham Black Barons, who played at Rickwood Field, which is where you and Ranger Amy and Anna DiTomaso of the Baseball Bucket List podcast and the gentleman from the Earned Fun Average podcast, we all hooked up there, watched the game together.
Absolutely. Yeah. We got to hang out with Johnny Bolin, the half of the Earned Fun Average team, and Donnie Wise, who they just happened to be there for that game that time. So it was that was a really fun time.
The Chattanooga Lookouts used to play at Engel Stadium, which still exists, but is no longer their stadium. And the reason I bring that up is they had in Chattanooga, there was a Negro Leagues team that played there. Actually, there were several. Chattanooga was home to Negro League teams from 1920 to 1951. And those teams included the Tigers, the White Sox, the Stars, the Black Lookouts, the Black Cats, and the aforementioned Chattanooga Choo Choos. And so with that in mind, it was in Chattanooga that Willie Mays, the legendary, and that is not a name, a term we use loosely, at least I do, when it comes to baseball players. Many people consider him the greatest player of all time, true five-tool player. Chattanooga is where Willie Mays first played professionally with the Chattanooga Choo Choos, who were members of the Negro Southern League, which was considered a minor league at that time. Okay, so with that in mind, our Studio Simon Stumper today asks, at what age did Willie Mays make his professional debut? Was it 14? Was it 16? Or was it 18?
I am going to rule out 18 because that doesn't feel remarkable to me. And Willie Mays, as you said, was remarkable. So it's 14 or 16. 16 feels logical to me, but 14, could he have made his professional debut as a 14-year-old playing Negro Leagues baseball, which I think is what happened? I want to say he was 14 when he made his professional debut.
Okay, well, let's do the math. How are you at math, Paul?
I'm pretty good at math.
Okay, well, let's see if you can work out this mathematical equation. Willie Mays was born in 1931, and he made his debut with the Chattanooga Choo Choos in 1945. So what did that make him?
That makes him 14 years old, assuming the birthdays line up appropriately.
Yes, they do. He was born, I believe, in May. So he was 14 years old when he made his professional debut. He played for the Choo Choos in 1945 and 1946. And then in 1948, when he was still only 17 years old, he played for the Birmingham Black Barons. He was signed by the New York Giants in 1950, made his major league debut the following year in 1951, and won the National League Rookie of the Year award that season at the age of 20. So he got his career off on quite a good foot, and it continued. It only went up from there. 660 lifetime home runs, first ballot Hall of Famer. God bless him, still living. I went to one game while he was still playing. It was his final season, 1973, when he finished out his career with the New York Mets. Unfortunately, he was not in the lineup that day, but they were playing the Atlanta Braves, and I got to see Hank Aaron play. So just imagine how that would have been, seeing Hank Aaron and Willie Mays playing in the same game.
I can't. I hope when that happened that everyone appreciated what they were seeing at the time, because what a thing to imagine. That's pretty incredible. Dan, this has been a fun one. I like this one very much. Obviously, the Negro Leagues history is such an important story and an important part of the lookouts and or baseball in Chattanooga. Anyway, I appreciate you bringing that side of this story into the Stumper segment of the podcast.
My pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you put in on these Studio Simon Stumpers. Thanks for all that you do for minor league baseball. I can't wait to get myself an Emperor's hat, and I can't wait to talk to you next week on Studio Simon Stumpers.
Okay, maybe someday we'll catch an Emperor's game together. Has Rome been, I would imagine you've not done a baseball palooza trip through that area.
Well, we weren't far. We did one where we started with, we did Gwinnett, Nashville, Bowling Green, and the Tennessee Smokies. So that was not too far from there. But holy smokes, that Penguin logo is going to look great on an ice cream helmet.
Well, hopefully they've got that in store for this season, and you can add that to the amazing collection that you have there in the Sunday Helmet Hall of Fame in your basement in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Can't wait to do that. And Dan, we'll see you next week.
Okay, see ya.